So basically, we are discussing Anatta Lakkhana Sutta as the theme of these days' mindfulness or young adult session. Actually, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, as we discussed last time, was preached by the Buddha to the five ascetics, Panchavaggiya Bhikkhu. Hope you can remember that after Buddha preached Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, Venerable Kondanya attained Sotapanna stream winner. And then stream entry, and then Buddha continued to preach Dhamma so that the other four venerables also attained Sotapanna. Now, after everyone became Sotapanna, then Buddha preached Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which is talking or emphasizing about the non-self characteristics. And after hearing that, all the five ascetics became Arahants. So this teaching is fairly unique to the Buddha's teaching. And if you consider various other religions, they always talk about creating God or some kind of an external entity, some sort of lasting, ongoing soul, undestroyable, eternal force. So these kind of teachings are there. But if we consider Buddha's teaching, Buddha reject all those soul-related belief, and he say that things are happening due to causes and conditions, and he teach that none of the aggregates consists of any kind of a lasting self, any kind of a soul, any kind of a core. So in that sense, this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is quite a strong one. Here, Buddha takes one by one the five aggregates and explain that none of them have a lasting soul or core or some sort of a heartwood. Now, last time we discussed about the form, that if we consider, say, our body, so we can't say that let this body be healthy always. Let this body be always beautiful. Let this never become old. Let this never subject to any kind of aging. So we can't say like that. Probably we may like something like that, but we can't say that to happen like that. So that is the issue. So that is where we have the problem, where this body is subjected to various kind of changes. Various kind of changes are there. So as a result of that, so it is constantly changing. It's constantly subjected to changes and even illnesses. And so due to that, we even today have a lot of trouble. Now the whole world is going through the COVID pandemic. And if we have any kind of authority, if we have any kind of a governability, then we could have mentioned, so none of us like this kind of a pandemic, and none of us like our body get infected by this. And if we say that, let my body not get infected, so don't know, we can't say like that. So if we go to some sort of a vulnerable area, this body also might get infected. And after getting infected, even though we don't like it, if we say that I don't like this COVID fever and all the other symptoms, I want to have a healthy body, so let this disease go away from this body. If we say like that, or even if we wish like that, it may not obey our orders. It may not obey our request. Because this body is not self. This body doesn't behave as we like. This body doesn't ask what we say. So it is always subjected to aging. It is always subjected to this kind of various illnesses. It's so vulnerable. So Buddha uses this point in this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, and he say, because form is not self. For if because form were self, this form would not lead to any kind of affliction. So if this form, if this body is a self, then it should be able to keep it in our control. So then it may not undergo any kind of an affliction, because we don't like any affliction, any disease, any uneasy situation we don't like. Since it is not ourselves, since it is not governable, or since it is not under our authority, then it is subjected to various illnesses, uneasy situation, uncomfortable situations. And but because form is non-self, form leads to affliction, and it is not possible to have it of form. Let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. So assume that I want to have a beautiful body. So I can't wish, may I have a beautiful body. Assume that today my body is not that beautiful. Now I have grown, it has become aged, it has become decayed, it has become somewhat ugly. And I wish to have a very youth, say, beautiful body. If I wish like that, it may not going to change, because it is not in my control. So this Buddha, using this kind of logic, so he continued to explain that even the feelings also have the same situation. Assume that we want to have a sort of continuous happiness, happy, pleasurable feeling we want to have. And it could be a very pleasant situation, it could be a very, say, happy, pleasant experience. So we want to have such experience for a long time, and we wish for that. But all of a sudden, everything can change. Suppose we are driving in a car, and say we are in a quite happy mood, everyone is talking, and we are enjoying something, someone is cracking a joke, and you all are laughing, and we are driving. And all of a sudden, there could be a kind of unexpected situation. Suppose that we meet with an accident. So all of a sudden, everything going to change. So that happiness that we were enjoying, that pleasure that we were enjoying, all of a sudden collapse. Now everyone is panic, and all are in a sort of a very frustrated, unhappy, sorrowful situation. Now we can't expect this happiness to last for a long time. Rather, it is subject to various other conditions, external parameters or causes, and even those can change this happiness. So the happiness can't be expected to behave as we wish. Similarly, if we are going through some pain, assume that we have some bodily pain. And if you are already sort of infected to any kind of a disease, maybe even COVID, so you might have already some sort of a problem or sort of a pain in the body. And if you wish that let this pain quickly disappear, I don't like it, but it doesn't ask you or listen to your request, it may take its own time to cure. So that we actually know. But unfortunately, we expect things to happen as we wish, and we feel that these feelings should behave as we wish. These feelings should be able to control as we wish. So this is a kind of an undercurrent that we have. Now Buddha therefore asks, so what would be the situation for feelings? Vedana anatta, vedana chahidam bhikkave atta abhavissa naidam vedana abhadaya sangvatti. Monks, these feelings are also non-self. Since they are non-self, they also are subjected to various afflictions, to various ups and downs. We don't know when a happy, pleasurable feeling going to change into a painful feeling. We don't know when this existing painful feeling going to change, going to disappear, and to say an equanimous feeling going to happen. And even an equanimous feeling, we don't know how long it's going to last. So it has various other causes. And when those causes are causing or these causes coming to being. So the resultant feelings are also changing. So those causes are not in our control, and hence the resultant feelings are also not in our control. Now, therefore, Buddha constantly draw our attention to this impermanent nature, this changing nature. And therefore, Buddha asks, Tankim manyata bhikkave, vedana nichangva nichangvati. What do you think, monks? Are these feelings permanent or impermanent? So the monks answer, yes, Bhante, they are impermanent. Now, this is not something they answer simply by book knowledge or out of faith to the Buddha. Rather, they have their own understanding. So they were observing various phenomena, especially here the five ascetics, five monks. So they are already stream winners. So they have their own understanding. So they have observed these various phenomena, various feelings in this situation. Now they know very well when a pleasurable feeling arises, it has its own lifespan, and it has destined to have some kind of a lifespan. Even in between, it can change. There may be other conditions which can abruptly change the lifespan. So likewise, these feelings are not kind of a pre-programmed or sort of scheduled kind of feelings. So various other causes and conditions can change their behavior. So the feelings can change into, say, pleasurable feelings can change to equanimous feelings. They can change to painful feelings. So likewise, so these feelings are quite impermanent. And again, if you are closely observing these feelings, probably you may notice that it is not a single feeling. It is a collection of various feelings, minute feelings. The resultant effect we feel like or we notice like a single feeling. But if we closely observe, if we closely analyze, we can recognize it's a collection of feelings. They quickly change, they quickly arise and quickly pass away. So if we consider this minute feeling, so it quickly arises and quickly passes away. So Buddha very beautifully mentioned that simile of the rain. So when a raindrop touches the water surface, there's a water bubble. So that water bubble instantly bursts. Assume another raindrop touches the water surface. Then another water bubble arises. But it quickly bursts. Assume it's a heavy rain. So at that time, constantly these water bubbles are happening, arising, and quickly they start to burst. Now, this is the picture that Buddha gives us, or the simile analogy that Buddha gives us for these feelings. So if we are closely observing these various feelings, we may understand it is not a single feeling, rather it's a series of feelings, a collection of feelings. It's a sort of resultant effect that we perceive like a single feeling. But when we are closely observing, we may understand, okay, this is a collection of feelings. Each minute feelings is very short-lived, very transient, very inconstant. So this is the picture that we may get. So this is the experience that we may get. So it is common to various pleasurable feelings, common to painful feelings, and the equanimous feelings. And their intensities change, their lifetime change, and their manifestation or the place where they are going to manifest, that also going to change. So there are many changes happening. So this is how we are in a way observing the or learning through the feelings, and this is how we do Vedanupassana. So once we have developed some amount of concentration, so that concentration being applied to the arising various feelings, and we are closely observing how these feelings are behaving. Suppose there's a feeling arise, say pleasurable feeling arise in your neck, some sort of a little massaging kind of a thing, maybe little irritation, maybe little pain, maybe little aching. So whatever it is, assume that you are keeping your concentrated mind there and you start to closely observe it. So as you closely observe it again and again, so you may understand what I have mentioned, that this is not a single feeling, it's a collection of series of feelings, and each minute feeling have the transient nature, rising and passing away. They are quite impermanent. And this collection of feelings also may change and may completely disappear, and now it can change even to a, say, equanimous feeling or even to a painful feeling. So they constantly change. So they are quite short-lived. So this is how we are again and again observing. Now, as a result of that, what happens? So our attachment towards these feelings, our grasping towards these various feelings, going to minimize. So when things are impermanent, then Buddha says, is it happy or is it unhappy? Or is it pleasurable or is it painful? Or is it possible to consider them as satisfactory? Or are they going to provide unsatisfaction? Then monks answer that they are going to suffer. It is kind of a suffering, kind of an unsatisfactoriness. Now, what is impermanent? What is inconstant? What is unsatisfactory? Is it worthy to consider as me or myself? Then these monks answer, no, venerable sir. No point of considering something vulnerable, something very transient, and not under our control as me or myself. So things are extremely inconstant, transient. On a such situation, in a such a process, we can't expect to have a lasting or permanent self, permanent nature, permanent core, lasting soul. So we can't have such thing because things are extremely transient. So then Buddha mentioned, Tasmatiha bhikkave, yankinji vedana atitanagata pachuppana. Now Buddha enhances our knowledge to various other directions. Not only the present moment, not only the present feelings, but even the past feelings, even the feelings which occurred several days ago, several years ago, few moments ago, they all are having the same nature. Probably we might have not observed them. We have simply observed the present moment feelings, whatever happens right now. But that knowledge can be expanded towards many other directions. So Buddha therefore enhances that knowledge to the past. So all the past feelings have this nature. All the future feelings going to arise also has this nature. And whatever the internal feelings also have the same nature. And all the external feelings, suppose someone else is going through some feelings, maybe a pleasurable feeling, painful feeling, it is not you, yourself, but someone else, those are also have the same nature. And then sukumangva, it may be gross feeling, it may be refined or subtle feelings, they all have the same nature. Hinangva panitangva, so it may be quite inferior ones or superior ones, that also have the same nature. And it could be far or near, that also have the same nature. So Buddha actually enhances our understanding. So he is using inferential knowledge. As a result of that, we can understand, even though we use our own body and the mind to do this experiment. And through that experiment, we have various insights. So those insights is not limited to our body, not limited to our mind, but it can be expanded towards various others as well, to other beings as well. So they also may go through various feelings, and those feelings also have the same nature. It is not something unique to me. It's a kind of a common characteristic. This impermanent nature, this unsatisfactory nature, this non-self nature, it's not only for me. It is common for everywhere, to everyone. Whoever is subjected to feelings, whoever is going through various feelings, they have this nature. So then Buddha mentioned, so if one understand that, it is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself. So, netam mama neso hamasim na meso attati. Eva metang yathabhutang sammappanyaya dattambam. So, whatever these feelings, it may be past, present, future, far, near, inferior, superior, internal, external, none of these feelings are me, mine, or myself. And then Buddha mentioned, evam passam bhikkave sutava ariya savako vedanayapi nibbindati. So one may continue this practice for a while. It is not that single day that you may get this understanding. Again and again you do this reflection. Again and again you experience this. You are directly experiencing how these feelings are changing, how they are rising, how they are changing, how they are passing away. And you are even enhancing that knowledge even to the outside. So if you do this sort of a practice, so your knowledge, your understanding broadens and your experiential knowledge further improves, increases. And once it reaches to some culmination, then Buddha mentioned, evam passam bhikkave sutava ariya savako vedanayapi nibbindati. As a result of that, your mind becomes disenchanted, not that interested about these feelings. Because you know for yourself, experientially, through your direct knowledge, that they are impermanent. They are not self. They are unsatisfactory. They are beyond your control. And they are subjected to change. So you know very well. As a result of that, now you are not going to claim them as me, mine, or myself. As a result of that, now you have a kind of a detached attitude towards these feelings. There may be pleasurable feelings, but you have some detachment. Now you are not going to hold them. Now you are not going to sort of grasp them. You are not going to wish that may I have more and more these kind of pleasurable feelings, because you know they are impermanent. You know that they can't provide you lasting happiness. You know that they are not yourself. As a result of that, now a kind of a separation happens. Now a kind of a disenchantment happens. Now it's like, now feelings are there, but you now observe like an outside person. The body may go into various feelings. The mind may go into various feelings. But now you are not inside those feelings, or you are not grasping those feelings, you are not claiming those feelings as me or mine, myself. Rather, now you watch them as a third person, as an outsider. Now, kind of a detachment has happened, kind of a disengagement has happened. Nibbindam virajjati. As a result of that, now you have kind of a dispassion. Instead of passionately holding them, now you have dispassion. Even pleasurable feelings are there, you are not attached to them. You have kind of a dispassion. Even painful feelings are there, you are not sort of repelled by them. You are not hating them. You have kind of a dispassion. Even the various equanimous feelings are there, you are not ignoring them, or you are not rejecting them. Simply you have kind of a dispassion, and you know they also come and go. So, viraga vimuchati. As a result of that, now you may feel that various feelings are there, they come and go. Now you have your own kind of an independence. The mind likes to stay quiet. Mind likes to stay secluded. Mind doesn't want to go and get involved. Feelings are there. Previously we get involved. Previously we attach. Previously we sort of repelled. But now, feelings are there. They may happen. But the mind is not interested. The feelings appear like distant. They come and go. They mind their own business. The mind has its own freedom. Now this freedom now going to slowly emerge. Nibbindam virajjati, viraga vimuchyati. As a result of this dispassion, say as you are continuing the practice, so the mind may feel kind of a freedom. Now it is free from any feeling. Feelings have the nature to come and go. Feelings have the nature to arise and passing away. Now those feelings are little far away. all have sort of calmed down, all have ceased. Now mind has nothing to observe. Whatever the feelings arisen have now disappeared. They all passed away. Now you are not going to attach with the form. You are not going to attach with the body. You are not going to keep your attention on the breath or rising and falling or various other element characteristics. So you are not going to do that. And again, you assume that your mind also free. Mind also doesn't have any kind of a thought. Mind also very silent. It's completely like transparent. Nothing is there in the mind as well. And whatever the feelings were, that also have disappeared. Now the mind has its own solitude. Mind has complete kind of a freedom. There is nothing close by. Just the pure awareness is there. Viraga imuchyati imuttasmin imuttamiti jnanam hoti. So once this kind of a freedom is available, so the person, the practitioner may know, okay, now mind has freed. There is nothing there now, nothing to hold. Whatever the bodily phenomena, they also have calmed down. Whatever the feelings, they also have calmed down. Whatever the thoughts, they also have disappeared. Mind also free. So there is nothing to hold, nothing to, nowhere to establish. So mind has its own freedom, mind has its own, say, spaciousness, has its own non-grasping nature, and the mind may experience such. So this is what Buddha mentioned related to the feelings. And with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Avsaray Bhante, currently there are two questions.
Yeah.
Question number one, sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, thank you for this valuable practice session we get every Sunday, which has been routine now nearly a year. When I get time, I practice in between sessions during the week. And even if I could not, this is 2 hours. This 2 hours is my solace for relaxation and reflection. Regarding my sitting practice, based on Bhante's guidance, I use breath as my main object of mindful observation. When the breath calms down and becomes subtle, I reach a state where there is not much to observe, as described by many in this forum. During this time, the focus shifts to the body and some elemental characteristics can be observed. The body becomes soothing, calm, and relaxed during the first 30 to 45 minutes of sitting. I also feel the weightlessness and floating like happy feeling from time to time. I use this as a signpost in the practice. Lately, I started thinking that my practice is now entirely motivated toward this calm and relaxing nature. From the beginning, I seem to look for it, and when the stage reaches, I feel happy and try to indulge in it as much as possible. This observation is not from a single session, Bhante, and I am not so smart or sharp person to recognize this from one go. I must have done this in the last 6 to 7 months in every session, and only now recognize that something is driving me. Should I consider this body comfort as a sidetrack deviation and focus on something else, or start observing the indulgence I have with it? Is this a doubt or valid concern, Bhante? With metta, that's the end of the question.
So as far as I can consider here, it seems that you were practicing for a while and you are able to recognize various, say, bodily phenomena. It may be various characteristics, bodily characteristics, say, rising and falling, breath, maybe element characteristics or various even feelings. And you were observing that for a while. So this observation is quite important. So I hope that you did this. So as a result of that, you have gathered some knowledge. So this knowledge actually happens because of this kind of an observation. So this is not a kind of a book knowledge. So book knowledge may be there with you, but what we emphasize here is the experiential knowledge that you have observed various bodily phenomena and how they behave. Their transient nature you have experienced, and you have experienced various feelings, and you understood their transient nature, and probably you have understood the transient nature of various thoughts as well. So as a result of that, if this kind of say relaxation happens, now you continue to do that observation, and in between that observation, suppose now everything calms down, everything relaxed, so then you actually can enjoy that relaxation. So you need to familiar with that relaxation. So it is not kind of a simple, or rather what to say, it is not that you simply observe the breath as a beginner, and then the breath simply calms down and you have kind of a floating kind of an experience. So that is kind of a concentrated oriented experience. But here, what we discuss here is that you actually went through this observation, you did this close analysis, and as a result of that you gain some wisdom, and as a result of that, so your mind become sort of a freed. So this is how that we even discuss today in this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. So as a result of this observation, this understanding, so mind simply become dispassionate. So there is no interest in the mind to further involve in this process, involve in this various arising phenomena, involve in this various passing away phenomena, because mind has understood their transient nature. So if this is the sort of situation you have, then it is good. So there are, once you have that knowledge, or when the mind gets that momentum, let that momentum to flourish. So as a result of that, the mind become calm, peaceful, non-grasping. So now you have to dwell in that non-grasping nature without doing anything. So now mind has freed. Now mind is not grasping anything, now not holding anything, and just be. Don't do any kind of a formations there. Don't do any kind of a fabrication there. Don't doubt there, and simply be. Yeah. You can go to the next section.
Question number 2 of 3. This is a general question. Venerable Sir, I recall you mentioning about observing subtle body reactions during day-to-day stresses. This was a few months back in a question and answer session. We are reading, listening, and seeing horrific news every day, and especially lately about COVID outbreaks and people dying in a miserable manner. Since these are overwhelming, I started observing the body while watching TV and realized that there are some subtle changes happening when the mind is unsettled. My neck gets stiff, face wrinkles, saliva comes to the mouth often, and the mouth becomes dry quickly. A small vein above my ear starts beating, heart rate increasing, heavy breath, etc., etc. I could not keep my attention to these subtle changes for long and got carried away quickly, but thought of using this technique when possible. Appreciate your advice how to apply these body observations continuously. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that is also a very good approach. So sometimes we don't have the, maybe even the courage to look at the mind directly, and we might not even sometimes have enough mindfulness developed. So on such situation, actually, instead of looking at the mind, you can pay attention to the body. So as you quite correctly mentioned, so there may be little stiffness. Maybe you are keeping your hands in a tight manner. So there may be various tightness in your various muscles, maybe facial tissues, that you are crunching teeth. You are thrusting, using the tongue upon to your, say, teeth. So likewise, there are many different ways that we unknowingly actually have these bodily reactions. So body get subjected to these various kinds of say tensions. So if we are able to recognize these tensions, if we are able to recognize all these subtle aspects within the body, then we can release them. Suppose you are keeping your hand very strongly to something, and you are taking kind of a say grip from that hand holding. So if you simply relax that hand, then quite a lot of stress has released. So even that may be reflected in the mind. So in order to keep some sort of a stress in the mind, so some kind of a bodily support also should be available. So if we simply let go of that bodily support, so we can't maintain or sustain that mental stress as well. So the mental stress also may disappear. So there is, in a way, it's not a new knowledge here, but actually this is a known fact. So these various bodily relaxation exercises actually helps to relax the mind. So this is what actually, in a way, we are discussing here. So rather than directly observing the mind, probably you can relax the body, and as a result of that, mind also get relaxed. On the other hand, you can do the other side. So once you are confident, you can see how the mind is tensed. So what are the grasping available in the mind? And you can simply let go of those graspings. So as a result of that, your mind also get relaxed and the body also get relaxed. Because when mind relax, the body also relax. So these are quite interconnected. So we can use both in a way to relax ourselves. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 4. There's 2 questions here, general questions. First one is, can we limit our meditation to sit down session? And the second one is, can we say the whole of the life need to consider as kind of meditation? That's the
end. Could you repeat the first question,
Chatur? First one is, can we limit our meditation to sit down session? I think what they mean was just doing sitting. Yeah,
yeah. I don't recommend that, because then the meditation may be sort of don't know whether COVID has come to Nissanwan.
Bless you, Bante.
So, by the way, we are in a far forest and we are enjoying a lot of freedom, even though many areas are now locked down. Anyway, so actually, I don't recommend the the continuous or rather only sitting session, because it can lead to, or it can bias towards concentration. Now, as you know, there are 5 faculties: Saddha, Vinaya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya, Faith, Effort, Mindfulness, Concentration, and Wisdom. So among those 5 faculties, we have to keep an eye on Mindfulness, Concentration, and Wisdom. So if we simply do sitting practice, there's a high probability that our mind may tense towards concentration. So immediately your mind get concentrated and you are getting to some sort of an absorption or sort of an unknowing area, and you may simply dwell there. It could be very blissful. It may be a very comfortable situation, but there is no wisdom going to develop. You can stay there for many hours. It's a kind of a pleasant abiding. That's all. Wisdom is not there. So that is why Buddha mentioned, say, for example, in Sallekha Sutta, even if you are in various absorptions, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, or even immaterial jhana, Buddha says it's true that they are quite blissful, it's a very pleasant abiding, but I am not saying that they contribute towards the fading away of various defilements. I am not telling that it helps to cut off the defilements. So that is the Buddha's words. So that is why Buddha mentioned the practice of vipassana, where you need to constantly observe the nature of various phenomena, all the conditions phenomena. So whatever the phenomena you are able to experience, and you need to observe them. So this observation is possible not only in the sitting posture, but even in the walking posture. And walking posture, walking meditation, give a very rich ground for us to practice this, because there the concentration is not the one going to be emphasized. It's the mindfulness is the one going to emphasize. So you constantly change the bodily posture. When your left foot is touching the ground, there you pay attention. When your right foot is touching the ground, there you pay attention. So likewise, you are constantly paying attention to various objects. And they also subject to change. Now, there is no single object for you to observe. Rather, a series of objects are there. They also are quite vulnerable, quite changing. As a result of that, it is more oriented towards vipassana. So, if you are able to combine these two practices, say sitting practice as well as the walking practice, then there's a high possibility for you to gain a lot of wisdom. And you can further enhance this to various day-to-day activities, daily activities. And then, as you mentioned in the second part of the question, then the whole life become kind of a meditation. So, it is actually happening naturally. If you are a good practitioner, then it is not kind of an effortful kind of situation. Rather, you enjoy it. From the very moment that you wake up till you go to the bed to sleep, then you may start to observe maybe body, feelings, the mind. And even when you are engaged with any other activity, you keep an eye on your mind, how it is reacting, what are the defilements arising. This actually happens when you reach the Chitta Anupassana, the Manupassana area. So you keep on guard on the mind. So this is how the situation is. So therefore, I encourage to practice not only the sitting, but other practices as well.
Bhante, in that question, there was the second one, which you sort of answered. But anyway, it was, can we say whole of the life need to be considered as kind of a meditation?
Yeah, true. That is why, I mean, there's even a book called Jeevitayama Bhavanavaki. It's available in our website. It's translated by Rani Rajapaksha, and it was written originally by Dr. Thin Thing, a Burmese teacher. And she's actually a practicing physician. And her original book is Living Meditation, Living Insight. I think that's the name of the book. I can't remember. So anyway, the book is available in our Nisarnoni website. You can read that as well. So it happens naturally, gradually. It is not that immediately you can have that kind of a situation. Rather, as you continue to practice, it may happen naturally. And you may enjoy it. And you don't need to consider it as a kind of a burden. And you may willingly allow that change to happen. It's a very natural transformation happens in our lives.
Question number 4. This one is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for the valuable Dhamma sermon on how to view feelings. When we experience intense feelings like sorrow, how can we turn that around? I currently feel sad about a family member who is ill. I know there must be a better or more productive way to think instead of being sad all the time. Sometimes the sadness is so overwhelming. What can we do in such situations for everyone's well-being and to support the person who is unwell? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, nowadays we have to discuss these things as well because now the whole world is going through kind of an unfortunate situation. So we need to think how to protect ourselves, especially our inner self or inner, say, mental well-being. So it is true that we may protect ourselves from COVID or any other thing physically, but how to protect the mind, how to guard the, mental well-being. So that is very important area. So how careful are we about the health of the mind? So how can we maintain a healthy mind is quite important. So as you mentioned, as we discussed, so if we continue to watch TV these days, continue to watch various news, so ultimately we get depressed because everywhere the situation is sometimes getting worse and people are dying and things are sort of aggravating. So if we again and again see these things and think on these, and we do kind of a proliferation, then we are messing up the thing. So therefore, don't too much watch news. So that is very important. So maybe one time per day is more than enough just to get an update, and then simply forget it for the time being and have something, say, kind of a drive or kind of a positive atmosphere, positive feeling into yourself, because this is also going to change. So we can't say this pandemic is the end of the world. So this also may change. So we have to have some sort of a hope in that. So, and again, think something positive. Say, don't allow the mind to again and again ruminate on this kind of a situation, or thinking about that particular person again and again, and going to happen that thing, this thing, and always sort of anticipating some sort of a bad. Rather, think of the good side. Say, how these situations are going to teach us. So what are the possibilities available, and what are the lessons we can learn from this situation even. And on the other hand, how we can see the better side, and how we can have some sort of a gratefulness even to the current situation. Suppose you are in a particular place, you are still safe, and appreciate that. Say, there are many other people who are also very vulnerable and quite already gone through a lot of suffering comparatively, so we are in a better situation. So that we can appreciate, and even the people who are looking after us, who are helping us, guiding us, and trying to keep us safe, that we need to appreciate. So we, rather than say blaming others, okay, they didn't do enough for us, the government didn't do enough for us, they didn't order things quickly, and they did this, they did that. So likewise, always try, without, so that kind of a fault-finding attitude, not going to help us. Instead of going through that sort of a fault-finding attitude, why not are we thinking that they are doing their best? So this is why I am at least safe for the moment. If they simply neglected their behavior or simply neglected their responsibilities, assume that we all are already dead. But at least for today, I am alive because they did something. They did something good. So they are doing their best. The doctors are doing their best. Nurses are doing their best. Securities forces and all, they are doing their best. Administrators are doing their best. So we can think of that positive side. Unfortunately, our human nature is always looking the bad side. So that is the unhealthy aspect of our mind. So if we are able to purposely, deliberately think in the positive side, so that actually help us, rather than wounding ourselves, rather than torturing ourselves, instead we can simply see the better side, the good side, and that actually helps to heal ourselves. So we become happy, we are sort of with a pleasant smile. So that actually helps. That helps to even have a kind of a pleasant environment with others, have a good association with others. So that actually helps others as well. Yeah.
Question number 5. This is a general question. When contemplating on painful feeling, if the pain gets severe, how can one prevent aversion towards the pain? That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So that depends actually. So if you can't bear it, so don't try to sort of go through it with a lot of crunching teeth and, you know, that sort of an attitude. That is wrong. Rather, you simply change the posture, or you simply get up and go for the walking. So it is not expected for you to go through all the pains, and you have to bear all the pains, you have to torture yourself. It is not expected. Yeah.
I think that's the last question, Bhante. We've finished a little early. I'll just ask if anyone has any questions they want to put directly to Bhante. You can raise your hand and then we'll unmute you. If not, then we'll just finish up early. Okay, looks like there's no questions. To conclude the session, I'd like to first of all thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program, and also to pass on our merits to him, as well as the people seen and unseen that are helping with the program and participating. And lastly, to the people on the call, because without you, there would be no prep. Everyone's on.
Then one, Sarnai.